Good afternoon and welcome to Results Matter Radio. I am Erin Mazaros, Chief Marketing Officer and Director of Client Service for the law firm of Burr & Foreman, and I will be your host for today's segment along with my co-host Lee Cantor, who is the CEO of Atlanta Business Radio X. If you are new to Results Matter Radio, welcome to the show. Our show is developed to bring you pertinent business information and offer real-life solutions to help drive desired results for you, whatever your business may be. Before we jump into today's segment, let me welcome my co-host Lee. Hey, Lee.
Hey, Erin. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing good. Is that a new outfit?
It is.
It's looking good.
I'm telling you, you are so perceptive.
Am I allowed to comment on that?
The last time it was about my weight. So, yeah.
I pay attention.
I'm telling you. You do pay attention. Well, you know, we have a pretty neat topic today, Lee. In fact, I think you probably better pay attention.
And why is that?
Well, it's about background checks.
Oh, well, that was a great show. I hope you enjoy it.
Oh, I forgot to tell you that I did one on you.
That's not a good idea.
Okay, we won't give those results today.
Thank you.
Okay, so we have Lisa Warren and Ashley Hathaway with us today, and they, as I said, are going to discuss why background checks matter to physician practices or other healthcare providers, as well as tips on how to handle the delivery if you happen to get negative results. Mental note there?
Negative results. Okay.
This topic is geared for office administrators of physician offices or hospitals, but will address specific tips for physicians who are involved in the interview process as well. Lisa Warren, who joins us, is a healthcare consultant with Warren, Averett, Kimbrough & Marino in Birmingham, Alabama. She has spent over 15 years working with physician practices on improving the operations and financial performance of their organizations. Ashley Hathaway is a partner at Burr & Foreman in their labor and employment practice and represents companies in all types of labor and employment matters, including litigation and advice. She has worked closely with many healthcare providers on their employment issues and represented them in disputes. Welcome, ladies.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Good. We're glad to have you. You know, it's interesting because when we talked about this topic of background checks, there were two that really came to mind that I think we all are familiar with, and that's the credit and criminal checks. I think that's pretty common.
The one that Lee's worried about.
We won't say which one.
Yeah. Be good.
So I thought we'd just jump right into those two, if you ladies don't mind. Maybe we can start with the credit check. Give us some thoughts about the credit check. You know, why you do that, the elements of that, etc.
Yeah. So you do that for an you're hiring someone. You do a credit check on them.
I do. I typically do them on employees that will be handling money.
Oh, yeah.
And so in a physician office, this would be the office manager or administrator, a receptionist, or an insurance clerk. I wouldn't typically run a credit check on a clinical person that would not be handling money.
And okay. Then, so what are you looking for?
Well, I look to see whether they have a poor credit history. And in particular, people who it's been shown that have a poor credit history are more likely going to be the ones to embezzle. So those are the ones I'm most concerned about. If people have a bad credit history, that they are going to be more likely to be desperate and do something that they may not normally do.
And somebody with a pattern. So not somebody who, you know, was dumb in their college years.
Right.
And, you know, over the last 3 or 4 years has established themselves, but that has pretty poor past credit history.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
Is there a number you're looking at?
No, I don't look at credit scores. What it does is it gives a credit history so I can tell if they have been reported by their credit card company, by their car dealer, or right. any other various vendors that they've been behind on their payments, as well as if there have been any sort of bankruptcy notices or bad checks, things like that.
Well, what about, you know, with today's economy, you know, I'm sure that the bankruptcy, people filing bankruptcy is much higher, I would assume that, I'm not sure I should, than it has in the past. Ashley, is that something you can use to disqualify, or should you use to disqualify someone?
Well, there's been a little bit of debate about that. There is a law that prohibits employers from terminating employees because they have filed for bankruptcy. So that's an absolute prohibition, that you can't terminate a current employee because they filed for bankruptcy. There's been some argument made that private employers also, that the same law prohibits private employers from not hiring someone because of a bankruptcy. But most of the courts that have dealt with that have found that there's not that prohibition. They have not read the law that way, so that the statute that prohibits you from terminating employees does not prohibit you from not hiring someone because they have a bankruptcy record.
So if you are employed and you file bankruptcy, is that, that's private, isn't it? Or is that common knowledge? I mean, the only way your employer would know is if you told them?
Right.
Okay. Okay, good.
Or if for some reason they did a check for some other reason, or
and it came up.
Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So keep your nose clean.
Right.
Once you have a job.
Well, and we found out in various instances because creditors start actually calling the practice.
Oh.
If they've listed them as employers. So all of a sudden now the practice is involved in a situation knowing people's financial business when they would not otherwise be.
So creditors are allowed to do that?
Only if they give it, right? Mm-hmm. Only if they tell them where they're
listed
employed
as an employer. Okay.
But they need to do that in order to get the money. Usually, right?
Oh, yeah, that's mm-hmm. true. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, see?
Well, and it's
sharp.
Paying attention.
Well, and I don't categorically not hire people because of bankruptcy. What I will do is usually in the interview process, I will tell them I'm going to do a credit and a background check, a criminal background check. And most of the time, employees will say, well, let me just tell you that I've had to declare bankruptcy. And they'll give me the whatever history they had, why they had to declare bankruptcy. And I respect that. If people are upfront with it, I don't exclude them
because
they've told me what happened. And if it's in the past, I will not generally exclude them.
Do they do that as a way of like kind of heading you off at the pass so that you don't discover that on your own?
Well, I will discover it if they sign the paper. So, I appreciate them just being up front and providing an explanation.
So you still do the credit check?
I will.
Even though they told you?
Mm-hmm.
I think the point that Lisa made, that she generally limits it to people who are going to be handling money,
right,
is important. There is some argument that if you just disqualify everyone that has a poor credit background or bankruptcies, that there's an adverse impact on certain groups of people.
Oh.
And so you want to keep those types of checks and what you do with the information that you find in those checks job related.
Okay. Good point. Well, what about the criminal check? What are some of the things that they need to be looking out for or need to make sure that they do so that they get all of the information that they're supposed to make an informed decision?
Well, usually if you're using a screening vendor, there will be a form that the employee fills out. And I think it's important to make sure that form is filled out completely. In other words, if they've lived in multiple states, that you have the information on all of their addresses and all of the states that they've lived in. So be sure to have your forms complete.
Okay.
And then the reason for that is the checks have to be state by state?
Yes. Usually the criminal background checks are state by state. Sometimes they can even be by county within states.
Oh.
So this may cost you a little bit more money, but it's really important to do. I've had a case in Alabama where we had someone come into a practice in Alabama. They lived in Georgia 6 months ago. We checked the Georgia, and they had been convicted of meth.
Oh, wow.
So they were moving around to get away from these convictions, and because we checked both states, Alabama was clean. They'd only lived there 6 months, but they had this problem in Georgia.
And that's, if you see that someone has moved around a lot from state to state, that may be a red flag that there have been some issues. Of course, there may be many other reasons, but if you see that there's been a lot of change, that may be an even more of a factor in deciding to check all the various states.
So how many of your physicians' practices do background checks? Because I know in a previous segment we talked about only 15% of them really do drug screening. Do they do the background checks? Is that standard?
I would say no, they don't. And that's another thing that I think they should. These kind of background checks, the credit and the criminal and some of the other ones we'll talk about later, I think are often neglected in physician practices.
How many years back do you do a criminal check? Like how far back do you go?
Well, that really depends on the state. Criminal, what you can do as far as checking criminal convictions has a lot to do with state law.
Right.
So where, in one state you may be able to go back 7 years, in one state you may be able to only go back 1 year. Most of the services that check criminal backgrounds will know the requirements and how far that they can go back. But that's something you want to make sure you're complying with whatever state law.
But there's no national database that you plug a person's name and Social Security and find their any criminal activity.
Yeah, it's just generally. Now, I'm not certain.
Is it the FBI?
I don't know.
Yeah.
In CSI, they always seem to be able
to. Oh, you're right. They put it through the system.
A partial the print, and they're able to find out everything about this. It's amazing.
Right. Unfortunately,
did we get
it's
the
not,
glass Lee had his hand on?
That's right. It's not as sophisticated in real life as
really?
It is on CSI.
Who knew?
Well, I think, Lee, do you think there are other types of background checks?
If I was a betting man, which they can probably check and see if I am.
Well, ladies, what other types of background checks should your physicians be concerned with?
Well, one of the things they need to be sure and do is to verify the immigration status. Mm. And Ashley can speak more to the different laws because this is an on-again, off-again requirement.
Well, federal law requires that everyone that you hire be authorized to work in the United States. And if you're a U.S. citizen, that will be the case. If not, then the person needs to present the proper paperwork to work in the United States. So most employers have part as part of their hiring process, they will collect that paperwork and have the person complete an I-9 form. But another thing that you can do is to visit an E-Verify website, which is a relatively new service, and you can check their social security number on the E-Verify website, which is found on the Immigrations and Customs website, to see if it's a valid social security number and if there are any potential problems.
Is the burden on the employer or is it on the employee for being honest?
It is. Well, there's a burden on the employer to get the paperwork.
Right. So say I have fake paperwork
right.
and I hand it to the employer and it's that he looks at it or she and looks good.
Then generally the employer is not going to be responsible. Mm-hmm. If they're given paperwork that appears to be legitimate,
right.
then they've generally done what they need to do to comply with the law. But if they find out through some other means that person is an illegal immigrant, then there could be some trouble. Right.
Because a big firm just recently, it was in a big chain, was just nailed for...
What, a law firm?
No,
oh.
a big retail.
Oh, a food. Retail chain.
Yeah, there's, I mean...
Well, Walmart.
Well, yeah,
Walmart
had a lot
has been in the news forever.
Troubles, right. And there's been a lot of trouble, too, with contractors hiring illegal immigrants and then the employer that contracted with the service.
Right, like how much are you supposed to check? I mean, that's a tough one.
It is a tough one. But it's important. It's something that particularly since 9/11, the government, has
right.
really paid attention to. And as you noted in the news, there's a lot of publicity about it. So as one of your checks, you absolutely need to complete your I-9 form, get your paperwork, and consider using the E-Verify service.
Should you hire another person, like a third party, to be doing this kind of work for you?
The employer has to do the I-9. That's the employer actually has to handle that one.
And the E-Verify is pretty simple to do. The website is www.uscis.gov, and you can type in the Social Security number, and it'll tell you that information really quickly. So I'm not sure it would be worth paying anybody money to do that. That could probably be handled internally.
Okay, good. Well, what other types of background checks are there?
There's more.
I'm thinking
a lot.
There. I know.
Well,
I know.
With healthcare in particular, licensing is very important. Whether it's licensing for your physicians, whether it's licensing for your nurses, or whether it's licensing for any of your other ancillary employees. So to start out with the physicians, the first is obviously to verify their licenses, and you can do this through the Board of Medical Examiners in whatever state that you're in, and you can find out some really interesting information on this Board of Medical Examiners website. It will list if their license has ever been suspended. It will give you details on why it was suspended, and it'll give you details on what they need to do to have their license reinstated. And I did this for a client not too long ago and found out information about a physician who had inappropriate relations with a patient, had to go to sex addict therapy.
Oh, wow.
And as a result of getting his license reinstated, we had to have an employee in the exam room with him at all times.
I would say so.
So that is obviously...
Did he have to post that?
Yeah, it was on the Board of Medical Examiner's website. It is
common
knowledge.
What about his office? Did it have to be...
It didn't have to be posted in his office, but then try explaining that to the employees. It became a very awkward situation. So look on the State Board of Medical Examiners if you're ever recruiting, not only for license verification, but if they've been jumping around states. I think, again, it's one of those things that'd be really important to look at those websites.
And that's state by state?
It's state by state. The State Board of Nursing is a good place to go for your nursing licenses. Anybody can make a computer-looking license nowadays, and so it's important to go ahead and verify your nursing licenses. Depending on the state, it depends on whether your ancillary techs have to be licensed or not. For example, in Alabama, radiology techs, people taking x-rays, do not have to be licensed RT. In some other states, they do.
If they don't have to be licensed, how do they learn how to... They just go
it's
to
on
some,
the job training.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. They don't even go to a 90-day crash course?
Not necessarily.
So well, every depends. State has their own rules.
Every state has their own rules on that. So know the rules for your state. Some of the other issues that you get is obviously medical malpractice. If you have people coming in your practice that aren't licensed and say it's a chemotherapy nurse and they're not licensed to administer chemotherapy, you could have some problems there. I've had, again, physician issues where they said they were board certified. We hired, signed an employment contract. The hospital went to verify credentials and turned out he wasn't.
Oh, wow.
So it doesn't go without
saying. So they signed an agreement before checking?
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel about doing that? Probably not a big fan of that, huh?
Not a big fan, no.
Why would you do that? That doesn't make sense.
Well, usually in contracts, if they're well written, we'll have something in
some
there.
Some out.
Right. And so we were able to get out of that situation. But obviously, check licenses.
What about like people who are licensed in other countries?
Usually, if they are a foreign educated physician, they'll have a certain certificate. And the initials, I think, are called EFMG. And it's a formal certificate that says that they have a license in the state.
And then do they have to, if you have a foreign license and then you come here, you have to pass some other tests?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, what about, I know one of the things that I've heard you guys talk about is OIG exclusion lists. What is that? What's an OIG exclusion list?
But everybody in healthcare hears OIG and starts shaking. But generally, the OIG stands for the Office of Inspector General. And these are the people who basically police the federal healthcare programs, Medicare, Medicaid, TRICARE, CHAMPIS, the VA. So they're kind of the federal payment police. And if someone's on the OIG exclusion list, this means that they are excluded to get payments from any federal payer, as well as any downstream referrals. So if you have an excluded physician that writes a prescription, the federal payers will not cover that prescription. If they prescribe physical therapy, they won't pay for the physical therapy. So it's kind of a big deal. And they make it on the list usually by violating some sort of fraud and abuse law. And I think it's important to note that this OIG exclusion list, you can go on the website and check it. It's www.oig.hhs.gov. Now, this is not just for physicians. It can be any healthcare provider. It can be nurses. It could be physical therapists. It could be pharmacists. It could be company owners. So this is not just limited to checking the OIG list for physicians, that it could be any sort of employees. And in fact, yesterday, the Department of Justice subpoenaed almost 111 people for fraud and abuse.
Potential,
yes, alleged. And it ranged from pharmacists to physical therapists to nurses to company owners.
And once you're on the list, it's forever?
Or well,
you can get out?
You can get off of it eventually. Yes, you'll go through appeals. But if you're on the list, you're on the list. And anybody who employs them needs to be aware. And
so in physician practices where you've got 10 or, you know, 8-10 doctors working together, what if two of them are on the list and eight of them aren't?
The two on the list can't see any sort of federal payers.
And do they do that? Do they want to mix and mingle like that?
I don't know that I would.
Yeah.
It's too difficult
to
keep track
of.
It is.
I guess so. If you're already, you know, you've already formed the practice and somebody violates it. How does that work with the way they bill? Because isn't it all one run through one centralized?
It's a centralized tax ID number, but that's usually based on by provider. So you can have providers in your group that say, don't see Medicare and Medicaid.
You could. Huh.
You could. Most of the time, if their behavior issues enough that they have made it to the OIG exclusion list, you probably don't want them in your practice to begin with.
That's good to
it's
know.
It's not an award.
Oh, it's not.
No, okay. And that's that where we talked about that nice contract where you can get out of it. That would be where we exercise that language.
Well, what about reference checks? Because that's pretty standard, whether you're in a physician's office or just in
I bet
general.
Nobody checks references, right?
Very few people.
I knew it. That everybody says that. Oh, here's my references. It's like, yeah.
And they hand a nice, pretty sheet
right.
that you just say,
and it says,
oh, this
like,
looks great.
Oh, Barack Obama.
They,
yeah, I'm going to call him up. See how good Aaron is.
Right. Darn it.
Now, one reason that people say they don't check references is they're not going to learn anything. That's a complaint that I hear a lot from employers. You know, if I call these references, they're not going to tell me anything.
Right.
Because they may say, well, she worked here April through May.
Is that all they're allowed to say, or can they say, oh, she was drunk all the time? That's why we got rid of her.
Well, my advice would be they not say that.
That seems like that's usually your advice.
I think he knows what his background check said, and we haven't even shared it yet.
Yeah, I think he's trying to warn us of things to come.
Full disclosure.
Right. You know, the problem is no one wants to get sued for defamation, so... You know, employers want to be careful about what they say about individuals that they've employed. And so the best practice is just to give the job title and the dates of employment. And that frustrates a lot of potential employers who are trying to get information on candidates.
Now there is a question I know you've shared with me before that you can ask, which will tell you all you need to know.
Well, that question is, you can ask if they're eligible for rehire. And that does tell you a lot. If they're not eligible for rehire, there's
something going on.
That's right. So if the employer will tell you that, and most employers will tell you that.
So you're not saying, would you rehire them?
Right.
You're saying, are they eligible?
And then you say, no.
Right. And you're not asking them, why did you fire them? Or did they get fired? You're just asking if they're eligible for rehire. But that tells you a lot. You know, it's important to ask good questions in the interview process.
It seems like there's magic questions that you two know. That me and Aaron don't know.
I think there are. Right. Unfortunately, I violated many things here.
Yeah, it's all in the questions, and Lisa and I have had a lot of experience in them. Unfortunately, usually when I see them, it's because someone has asked the wrong questions. Right. Lisa is very good at pointing out the right questions you should ask in the first place.
What about the... off the record, so when someone calls you and say, off the
Does
record.
Does that really count?
Can I tell you?
Is there an off the record?
Well, there's never really an off the record, and that is a difficult situation to be in. And, you know, it happens quite a bit, and particularly so when you have a kind of a smaller network like healthcare providers or physicians groups.
Yeah, because I would think they'd want to look out for each other.
Sure.
And if they're friends and they're physicians, they'd want to say, hey, let me tell you off the record, buddy, don't hire her.
Sure. And so that happens sometimes. And then the potential employer that learns that information, you know, has to decide how they're going to deal with it, because they don't want to necessarily reveal the confidence of their colleague. Now, one thing to keep in mind is that in most instances, you don't have to tell somebody why you're not hiring them. You know, if you just decide that they're not the best fit for you, you just simply can tell them that, or tell them that you've decided to go with another candidate.
Direction,
right,
or,
in a different direction. That's a good one.
Oh, good, because I use that. I'm good. I did one thing right.
There is an exception to that. There's a Fair Credit Reporting Act that requires that you give certain disclosures if you are going to not hire somebody because of a report that a third party does for you, like a credit check or a criminal background check. But if you're just decided not to hire somebody because of the interview that you had with them, you know, the impressions of the office staff about them, information that you learned from others, you don't have to tell them what it is.
Okay.
Just, we've decided not to hire you. Thanks for applying.
Well, let me ask this. When you receive all of this information and it's coming across your fax machine, or is it received by PDF in your email, what do you do with it? Because we've talked earlier in this show, as well as some other shows, about trying to keep that information separate, because you don't want people to see this information along with their personnel file of just their employment contract, etc.
Yeah, I would be very careful when you set up with your third party screener for the credit and criminal checks that you do not have it come to a general fax number.
Okay.
Because then anybody can pick it up, anybody can review it, and you could really run into some problems. So I generally recommend that you have them email it to you if you've got secure email directly to the manager or whoever the hiring party is.
Okay.
And not have it come across any sort of general fax.
Okay, good. Well, what are some of the best practices, do's and don'ts that you would offer up for individuals listening to this segment?
Well, I'll start with one because it ties in with what the two of you were just talking about. If you decide to hire somebody, keep in mind that everything does not have to go in their personnel file. And if you have sensitive information,
so you
like,
can keep it off the record.
Off the record. Or maybe just a different file would be a better way to say it. A different record. That's right. You know, access to personnel files should be limited, but people are going to access personnel files for various reasons. And if you have some sensitive criminal information in there, credit information in there, then that can be bad for employee morale in the office, and it's confidential information that you really don't want others seeing. So, you know, I would suggest having a separate file maybe for credit checks or criminal checks. You definitely want to have a separate file for medical information. So not everything that happens has to go in the personnel file.
Okay. And I think that's, I know I'm guilty of that. All my stuff is in one file. Mm-hmm. Well, what other tips or do's and don'ts, Lisa, do we have for the listeners?
I would only do the criminal and credit checks on people that you're going to hire. And that way it doesn't appear that it is a wholehearted screening process where you're doing it on every single person you interview.
Okay.
Because frankly, it's none of your business unless you decide to make them part of your business.
And it also then becomes less daunting for the person who's doing it. Maybe the physician's practice will be more willing to do it on two or three people versus 30.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
What else? Anything else?
Yeah, I mentioned it earlier, but don't forget about the Fair Credit Reporting Act. If you're going to have third parties do checks for you, you need to have an authorization form signed before those checks are done. So you want to have that form done. And then also, if you use the information on those reports, you need to make certain disclosures. So don't forget about that, Lol.
Okay. Well, you know, it's a tradition on our show that when we near the end of the discussion that I make a last request. And so, ladies, my last request would be if you could offer one piece of advice for the listeners, what would that be? Lisa?
I think don't get desperate and lazy when you're making a hire. Many times a hire is an emergency. You've been short. It's taken you forever to find the candidate. So don't get lazy and desperate. Take the time to do these background checks, and that may prevent a bad hire.
Good.
Yeah,
Ashley?
That's great advice. I think mine would be only those who need to know should know. And I think that pretty much sums it up.
No, that's good. Well, we're about out of time for today's segment, so I'd like to thank both of you, Lisa Warren and Ashley Hathaway, for joining us today. That was a great discussion. Should you have any questions for Lisa or Ashley, please visit www.resultsmatterradio.com to find their direct contact information. If you're listening to us through podcast or via resultsmatterradio.com, please remember to visit the site next week to hear our tips on progressive disciplinary action plans. Lee?
I know a lot about that.
Okay, yeah. I'm thinking that you might need a disciplinary action plan.
You are not the first person who said that.
Thank you again to our guests and to my co-host, Lee. On behalf of Byrne Forman, a full-service law firm with offices across the Southeast, we'd like to remind you, if results matter to you and you want them to matter to your law firm, please give us a call. You can visit our website to find the right attorney for you at www.byrne.com. Thanks for listening, everyone, and have a great day.